Safety, dependability, and power. Chevy Silverado isn't happy unless the work is hard and the day is long. No wonder Silverado is America's number one best-selling retail pickup truck. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
Dr. Eileen Marty, professor at Florida International University. You ready for a batch of questions, Dr. Marty?
Oh, Bob, you always come up with such interesting questions. Absolutely.
And no shortage around here. 9% decrease in U.S. COVID cases over the past week, but a 24% increase in deaths. Why is that? Is that because of a delay in reporting?
No, it's because what we now understand of the natural history of the disease is, it takes time, Bob. You know, you don't just get sick and die. There's an incubation period before you even have symptoms, and then the symptoms are mild, and that's a few more days, and then you're in the hospital, and then you're sick enough to necessarily need an ICU, then you may need a ventilator, then you may end up dead. And so that all takes time. So the death lags behind when new cases come in.
I see. How many days should you wait to get a test from the day you think you might have been around someone who had the virus?
So that's a wonderful question, Bob, because there's a new study that's trying to push it back even further than what we've generally pushed it back. And it's like everything else, right? It sort of depends on what's the bolus of virus that got into you, because the bigger the bolus that got into you, the more virus there is to get into more cells to reproduce faster so that it could be detected sooner, right? Mm-hmm. So some people may test, a very small percentage, may test positive at 2 days away. But most people will test positive 4 to 5 days after exposure. And as I said, some people think that we should wait 8 days to be sure to capture everybody who was exposed. So this timing of the testing is actually a very critical issue. I've been a big proponent of using that 4 to 5 day range, because that's when we know that after exposure, 50% of people have by then shed enough virus to be able to contaminate other people. So if you can shed enough virus to contaminate another person, then for sure we should be able to detect the virus in the bulk of people. So there's your recommendation. A little bit of a spread.
Got it. We always get many questions from listeners about pets. What's the deal on this? Can pets get the virus? Can your pet catch COVID-19 from you? Can you get it from your pet? And what would be the symptoms if a pet had this?
So, yes, there are. This particular virus's receptor binding domain fits very nicely into the ACE2 receptor of many different creatures, right? And some animals are more susceptible than others. But remember, there is a difference between having a virus and having disease. Those are not equal, right? People make that mistake all the time. Oh, I got a test for COVID-19. You didn't really get a test for COVID-19. You got a test for the virus that may cause COVID-19. So the quintessential owner of these viruses are bats, because in bats, the virus reproduces very nicely, and the reaction of the bat's immune system is such that it doesn't lead to disease in the bats. So bats definitely are carriers of these diseases, and we know pangolins carry it, but we were talking about pets that people have. Most people don't have pet bats, right?
Right.
But they do have pet cats, and we know that felines are very sensitive to this particular virus. They will get the virus, and many will get sick. You'll remember the story of the tiger, right, getting ill from COVID-19. So cats, lions, tigers, but also hamsters and primates. So we are primates, and so are apes, and so are monkeys. And that's why primate studies are being done as, challenge studies for the vaccines, because they get sick from this virus. Minks, there's a huge problem with minks in Europe right now, getting sick from the SARS-2 virus. And the quintessential, most sensitive animal seems to be ferrets. In fact, the fact that ferrets get sick from this has taught us a lot of lessons about how this virus is working in humans. Because one of the things that people debated is, what's going on with these people? They keep testing positive. You know, are they still contagious? And it's been weeks after they first tested positive, and they're still testing positive. So some people took material from these long-time positives and put it on culture cells, these cells called Vero cells, and tried to grow it and say, oh, it doesn't grow, so it must be dead, or it must be parts of virus, and these guys are just fine. But smarter people took ferrets, and they took the same material that didn't grow on the Vero cells, but infected ferrets, and the ferrets got sick and started producing plenty of the SARS-2 virus. So these interactions in other animals are very, very interesting. Now, most people don't have any of the animals I've just named as their primary pet. Most people have dogs.
Yep.
And dogs are susceptible, but they don't tend to get sick. Of course, there's the famous case of the German Shepherd who unfortunately not only got the SARS-2 virus, but died. That particular dog had cancer. And so, just as in humans, there are certain pre-existing conditions that can make an animal more susceptible to severe disease from this virus. And then there's some animals that are just not susceptible at all, like chickens and ducks and pigs.
Mm-hmm. And as far as dogs, what would a symptom be? I know you're not a veterinarian, but what would we look for?
So a little bit lethargic, right? Just like we get fatigued, they kind of get lethargic. They may have a little bit of a cough or a sneeze. But again, most dogs don't manifest disease. They don't, so they may have SARS-2 virus without having COVID-19, and, right? Because COVID-19 is the disease, not the virus.
And could you get the virus from your dog?
So we've been worrying about that for months now, and so far we haven't documented a dog causing disease in a human, but we still recommend that if somebody has the SARS-2 virus, that they stay away from their pet until the human is no longer shedding virus. Because especially if you live with other people and have a pet, reason being that even if your pet doesn't get sick from the virus or maybe doesn't even acquire the virus internally, when you pet the virus, you're contaminating its fur, and then the other members of your household pet the same animal, and inadvertently you can now, in what we call that the fomite spread the virus to other members of your household, even if you yourself are isolating away from everybody else in the house. So we do ask people who are positive for the virus to stay away from their pets until later. And again, if you have a pet such as a hamster or a ferret or a cat, then those animals could get significantly sick. So absolutely stay away from those animals while you're positive.
Let me get you to back up and explain something you said about getting a test. Did you say if you test positive, it doesn't necessarily mean you're testing positive for COVID-19? It just means you have a virus?
No. It's just, everybody gets so confused, and it sort of drives me nuts. People don't understand that a germ and the disease that it causes are not necessarily the same thing. In fact, there are many germs that can cause multiple different diseases depending on how you acquire that germ, right? You can have, for example, strep can cause strep throat, but it can also cause impetigo. It can also cause other illnesses, depending on how that bacterium got into your system. And it's, that's true for so many different diseases. How you acquired, et cetera, determines what clinical disease you may or may not have. In the case of the SARS-2 virus, that's what we're testing for. Does the person have replication of the SARS-2 virus in their system, which can, in some cases, cause disease in some people, maybe they themselves or maybe somebody else that they then share the virus with? Think of it this way. Remember MRSA, that horrible methicillin-resistant staph aureus bacterium that can cause flesh eating and stuff? That's a horrible bacterium, right? You don't want to have that. And yet, as many as 45% of people are walking around with MRSA in their nose and have no disease, right? So the tests that we do don't, you know, disease is a set of symptoms that people have that, you know, make you feel lousy or can kill you, right? The pathogen is a different thing. So the tests look either for the RNA of the virus, because this is a viral, this is a virus that happens to be an RNA virus. So you look either for the RNA of the virus, or you look for the coding, so that the this SARS-2 virus has this RNA in the middle. Think of it as a little ball with RNA in the middle, and it's coated by protein that is kind of sugar-coated protein. So it's got sugar protein coat, and that sugar protein is what we look for when we do an antigen test, which is another way of looking for the virus itself. Then there's a third thing that we can do, and that's looking for a reaction to having that virus in your system. And the most typical reaction we look for is, did you form antibodies? So remember I said that sugar-coated protein is an antigen. Gen means generate. And what does it generate? It generates antibodies. So the other thing we can look for is, has the person developed antibodies to the antigen? You with me?
I am. I feel like I've been in school, and I hope you don't test me. Dr. Eileen Marty, I know you got to run, and I know you're going to be talking to people like Anderson Cooper and Brian Williams, and when they thank you, I want you to say to them on TV, by the way, have you guys ever gone to work the day after a root canal? Because in Chicago on WGN, Bob Surratt did that. Have you guys ever done that? I want you to ask them. Let me know what they say.
If they give me a second to speak, I'll see what I can do.
We'll talk to you next week. Thanks, Dr. Marty. Have a good day.